Hi, it's Coach MK. If you usually listen to this podcast with your children, first of all, bless your heart. And second, you may want to hit pause and read the description of today's episode before you go any further. I'll stall for the next 2 minutes so you don't have to stop your car. As I always say, I'm not here to tell you what to feel or how to deal, but I've never told you why. I was born into an evangelical family, missionary Baptist to be exact, and raised in rural Tennessee. I wouldn't interact with a Catholic, a Jew, or even a vegetarian until I was almost 16 years old because my hometown didn't have any. Met them all at a summer camp called Governor's School. In college, I would meet even more types of people for the first time, and I would be beaten up by allegedly open-minded people for having the wrong beliefs or for using the wrong words, words that I did not at the time realize were hateful when I asked honest questions. As a result, I believed all kinds of things well into adulthood. Now, there are all kinds of people in this world who have taken different journeys than I have, whose beliefs more closely match what mine used to be. If I'm going to create an environment that is truly inclusive, I cannot exclude those people. If I'm going to create an environment that is truly safe, I have to protect these people too. Feel free to ask me questions or express strong feelings, but for everyone's sake, let's keep it out of the Facebook groups and off of the Facebook page. Email me directly, mk@fitnessprotection.com. In return, I promise never to post your name, your personal information, or the contents of any private note you feel the need to send to me publicly, even if I consider that note to be hateful or harmful. Once upon a time, I thought that was what loving God looked like, warning people in the strongest language possible that they were wrong. Later, I would think that's what loving marginalized individuals looked like, warning the people who couldn't accept them in the strongest language possible that they were wrong. Shade never made anybody less gay, to quote Taylor Swift, and shame has never changed minds or hearts, to quote Nadia Bolz Weber. I'm not going to come at you for either position, as long as you only come at me, not Coach Sarah, and never Cade or Isaac. I love you for who you are, especially when you don't. I love Cade for who he is, and I will still love you if you don't, or if you are not able to. It's taken a really long time, but I love the 16-year-old MK as much as I love everybody else. She was raised to think some very strange things, but boy, her heart was fearless. I want to believe that yours is too. As a matter of fact, I know it is. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to two really incredible people with equally incredible stories, telling us how running has been the tool they've used to keep their heads above water. May we all approach opportunities like this with open minds, fearless hearts, and all the compassion we would like to receive. Hi, I'm Coach MK, founder of the Fitness Protection Program. I'm a run coach, not a life coach. We're never really talking about the running. Running is the tool. It's the conduit we use to examine the world we live in, as well as its impact on our own lives and the lives of the people around us. How we react to certain people and to certain stories tells us a lot about how we view ourselves. I'm committed to the thoughtful, intentional exploration of the importance of running so that no one discounts their own badassery ever. Final note, this podcast is geared towards every runner who won't lose their home, livelihood, or health insurance if they show up to the corral with a hangover. Not that I'm encouraging you to do that, just saying. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fitness Protection Podcast.
I'm so pleased to introduce Cade Schultz and Isaac Grivet to the Running Life Podcast. Many of you know of Cade at this point, since Coach MK announced last month that he would be joining our team of Fitness Protection sponsored athletes. And I'm going to let Cade tell us more about his running background in a minute. First, though, it's important to know that Cade is responsible for the phenomenon that is Coach MK, as he was the one to give her first coaching job at Lifetime Fitness. So thank you, Cade, for that. And in addition, he has done over 50 half marathons. And I'm dying to hear about this thing in his email signature, the 5280 or 5280. You're going to have to explain it to me. Brewery Quest. That we're going to have to talk about that at some point. Isaac has been profiled twice on OutSports, which is an SB Nation blog featuring stories of LGBTQ athletes. And in addition to having run tons of marathons, how many marathons, Isaac?
I'm training for my 10th.
Okay. Yeah, that's, to me, that's tons, especially considering how young you are. So in addition to having run tons of marathons, they also work on Broadway in wardrobe, often for multiple shows at a time. And I came across one of the OutSports stories via Twitter not too long ago. And I was really captivated by the way they talk about their relationship to their body as a teenager and the role that sports played in their discovery of selfhood. And this really gets to why I'm grateful to you both for coming to talk to me and tell your stories. I carry a lot of privilege as a runner. I sign up for a race. When I'm prompted to select my gender, I just tick a box and move on. I show up to every start line knowing that whatever imposter syndrome I may have about being a real runner, no one will ever call into question the validity of my results or argue with me about where in the sport I belong. I will not have to name or defend my identity every time I want to participate in my chosen sport in public. Isaac, you in particular have worked with athletic clubs to modify that process of gender selection and membership signups to make it less binary and more inclusive. And I imagine that to some people, it may seem like an incredibly small deal because many people like me just tick the box and move on with their day. And it is a small deal. But we cannot overestimate the importance of any action, big or small, that makes any runner feel more included in this sport. And it is actually a really, really big deal. And the last thing I'll say is this. I may not have ever experienced gender dysphoria, but I do absolutely know what it feels like to hate my body, to feel ashamed of it, and to feel like people look at it and form opinions about me that I am powerless to control and that I have no say in. And I want our audience to hear your stories, and I want them to hear them from you, because I believe that there is so much empathy out there for much of what you have experienced and lived. And I believe that everything is better when there's a space for everyone to show up and feel at home and welcome and understood. So Isaac and Cade, welcome to the podcast. And Isaac, you're training for your 10th marathon, and you started running marathons really young, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like, how 12. Young?
I was 12. Marathon.
So what led to that first one? Can you tell us about that a little bit?
So my mom also runs marathons, and she started, I believe, right after I was born. So like my entire childhood, I was going and watching her run and like cheering her on and everything. And I was like interested in running, and we would do like the 5K turkey trots and stuff, like starting when I was probably like 5 or 6 years old. And then when I got into middle school, there was this program called Students Run LA for schools in the LA area that they would like give you a coach, and they would give you shoes and clothes and race signups, and everything was free. And they would train you through the entire school year to do the LA marathon. And I was like, that, I want to do it. And my mom did not want me to do it. This is not okay. But I convinced her. And so my 2 years of middle school, I did that program.
Wow.
12 and 13. Yeah.
Were there other middle school kids running marathons around you? So did, yeah. Like there was really, wow.
Yeah. It's for middle school through the end of high school. So like it was, you know, that age range, whatever, like 12 to 18 ish. And there's like 4,000 kids, I think, that do it every year.
Oh my gosh. Kate, how old were you when you started running? Were you running as a kid?
Oh, Lord, no. Not unless I was running away from something or just playing sport.
What sports did you play?
Basketball. I was begged in elementary school because I was the tallest kid in the class or in the school.
Oh, wow.
Or not, or in the grade or whatever. So I played basketball from 5th grade through junior high, but then was in band. And so I became a band geek in high school. So I stopped sports. But I didn't start running till an adult.
So what, tell us about getting into running and what you found there that you didn't find elsewhere.
It's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, for someone that's never experienced the running high, you can't really explain that. I know both of you probably have, but, it's just, you know, you can forget your troubles and whatever and go for it. So I started in 2003 after a breakup and, you know, ran my first half marathon after the longest distance I had run was a 10K, which is 6.2 miles for those that don't know how long that is. And didn't know what I was doing, but I finished And then I ended up joining a running group and actually started training properly. And it just took off after that. I've done 4 full marathons, but I have retired from marathons because I'm too old for that. And so, oh my God, you'd have 10, Isaac. But my first one was 2005, I think. I did 2 in 1 year, one of them being Chicago, which was my all-time favorite.
Ooh, yeah, I love that one.
You run Chicago too?
Yeah.
It's sort of on my list. It's not really the top of my list because big city marathons, I have to really want to do it to want to do it basically. but I've heard so many wonderful things about it and about the inclusivity of it among other things. And so Isaac, your first marathon was the LA marathon and last year you ran the New York City marathon, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What is this next one that you're training for?
LA again.
LA again. Okay.
It'll be my 10th anniversary.
Wow.
It'll be my 10th marathon, 10th anniversary of running marathon. So, yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. And what did you find in running that drew you to the distance, to the marathon, especially at that age? I remember reading about you playing lacrosse. Was this also while you were playing lacrosse?
No, I actually started playing lacrosse in high school. But I was playing softball at the time. And at that time it was more just, you know, something that I could do with friends and like something that connected me and my mom. But like sort of as I went on and like I started realizing that I was trans, it was a really good way for me to be able to do something that was like in a way genderless. Like like you have to sign up as a gender and your results are based on your gender and stuff like that, but you can go and start a race and you're with everyone. So I didn't have to like worry about what I looked like or like if people would assume that I was where I was supposed to be or anything. And I really liked that.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Do you remember when you started feeling the awareness that something about the body you were living in wasn't right for you? And do you remember like what were the conversations playing out inside you as you were, you know, opting for running and realizing that, you know, these are some of the things that really drew you to it?
I think I was like 14 or so. But also at that time, even though it, you know, that was like 8 years ago, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but the conversation around trans people was nowhere near what it is today. Like there was no one on TV. There was no one really to look up to or anything. So I still like, I knew sort of like what was going on and what I was feeling, but I didn't really have like a name for it or anything. So I think like having running was a way for me to like sort of deal with it, especially when I wasn't able to really talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. At that age and at that stage, where did you feel like you were the most safe and where did you feel like you were under the most pressure to perform and be a certain way?
Yeah, because you kind of don't realize until you feel like there's something wrong, how like our entire world is so gendered. Like everything at school, every extracurricular activity thing that I did, like everything is so completely gendered. Like even if we did like running things in school, like in PE or anything, that was also weirdly gendered. So being able to do something outside of school and that like I could do it alone, I could do it with people, it didn't matter. Like
you didn't have to confront your whole identity every time you participated in a thing.
Right. And yeah, it was really nice because like the thing about like being trans is that there's already this like internal thing that you have to like sort of deal with, but then it also becomes this external thing and you have to start telling people and kind of your entire world changes, especially if, you know, a lot of people will come out like during a significant like switchover, like if they go to college or if they start a new job. Makes it a little bit easier, but I was in school and everything was changing. it was sort of running was something that I could keep constant.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And Cade, you worked in the fitness industry for a long time. And I'm really curious about what role that played in your relationship to your body as an adult. And especially because MK has told me a lot about you. You had a very high visibility role at Lifetime Fitness. And so how did that impact your thought process about who you were and about coming out and what it would mean for your life?
Yeah, as you know, myself being older, I didn't come out till I was 52. And, you know, like Isaac, I knew when I was little that I was supposed to be a boy. But back then, there was nothing. You didn't talk about it. There wasn't really awareness or anything. I mean, I didn't even come out as gay until after college, just because of the time period. But there were a couple trans that were in process when I worked at Lifetime. And it was actually sad to see them have to leave or change their job or whatever, because one of them, you know, worked in the locker rooms and they finally just left Lifetime. It's not that Lifetime wasn't going to be accommodating. I don't know the full story there, but he ended up finding something that, you know, made his passion or whatever. But it was just, you know, seeing all that. And then, you know, with me being in such a public eye, I was like, well, God, I can't do this now. I'm too old anyways. And so I just fought it and fought it and fought it. I'm too old. I'm too old. I'm too old. I'm too old. And so, yeah, it took me, as you can see, a long time, because I've known MK for 7 or 8 years. And I've known, you know, forever. But then finally getting into having more friends that were going through the transition and seeing their journey and telling them how jealous I was and proud of them, that, you know, they all start talking to me and going, well, you know, you need to live you. So it was really help for more transgender and my friends that were supportive to finally do it at the age of 52. So
that's really amazing. That is a huge change to bring into your life, especially, I think, in an old, I mean, and like Isaac said, in the middle of being in school, when you're in a place where everybody knows you a certain way.
Yeah.
And this, I'm speaking from doing a lot of listening and reading and thinking. I mean, the way you have to kind of ask everyone to reform their image of you. And I don't know if either of you got pushback on that from anyone in your life. So one of my favorite writers is Danny Lavery, who's Dear Prudence. He writes the Dear Prudence column for Slate. And he and his wife, Grace Lavery, are both transgender. And they had a conversation on the Dear Prudence podcast a couple months ago that really, really moved me. And one of the things that Grace said, and she's an English professor, and I love the way she talks about everything. One of the things she said was this, and I'm paraphrasing, but it really stuck with me, that if someone comes out to you as queer, as transgender, as non-binary, when someone says, please call me by this name and this pronoun now, they are telling you something really, really important. And they are saying, I have thought a great deal about who I am and how I'd like to live in the world and be perceived. And this name, this pronoun, this is who I am, and being called by the name and the pronoun that I identify with matters to me. And that when someone tells you that, they're not policing their language, even though I hear and see a lot of people kind of reacting to it in that way. They're telling you about themselves. They're telling you about them and about and they're really kind of trusting you, I think, with this very important information about them and asking you to expand your view of who they are to include who they actually are and who they have been this whole time. And so if you don't mind sharing, I would love to hear more from both of you about what it felt like to tell someone about this realization about yourselves for the first time and to say, this is the name and this is the pronoun and this is who I am.
So I'll start. For me, it was, you know, coming out a second time, you know, first coming out as gay and then coming out again as trans. And in both situations, I told my sister first. And when I had finally decided that I needed to do it, this is me, you know, live my true self, I was at my sister's house and I was going to tell her in person and I couldn't do it. I chickened out. Not that I didn't think she was going to support me. It's scary. I mean, you just don't know, even though I knew she was going to be supportive. So I ended up having to tell her over a text before, you know, I told everybody before they saw it on Facebook, of course. And she felt horrible. She goes, were you afraid to tell me in person? I said, yeah. I go, I tried to, and I chickened out. And she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You were, you know, in so much fear. She goes, did you think I was going to reject you? And I said, no, I didn't. I said, I knew you were going to be supportive, but it just was a hard thing to do. And, you know, and she understood, but it was just, you know, and so then she, you know, she just felt miserable that I was so scared to even tell her. And so then, of course, you know, I told my close friends and my family and everything, you know, I had a slight pushback on a few that I'm not going to mention just because they'll listen, but everything's
they only fine. Listen when you start saying mean things about them.
Yeah. So, but I mean,
that's the episode they listen to.
Yeah. Everything's been good so far. I mean, obviously it's a transition for everybody. And that's what I try to keep telling my family, you know, yes, I know you're not going to call me Cade right away and it's going to take a while. And I have allowed my family and close friends in my sister's neighborhood to still call me by my nickname, Kiki. I told them that's fine. I don't have a problem with that at all, you know. But, you know, for everybody, I mean, I have to retrain my customers that I deal with on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, in fact, I just got a customer that came back after not being with us since last May. And I'm like, you know, and she addresses me by my birth name. And I said, oh, all I say is I've gone through a name change, you know, because they don't need to know everything. And it's always been great reception. I think they figure it out. But, you know, it definitely was a scary thing. But then it's like I'm, you know, free again, like I did when I first ever came out as a lesbian, you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Isaac probably possibly has a similar thing, but that's my story.
Yeah. I mean, I was the same way. Like everyone that I knew before that I came out to was like either over text or in a letter or like an email or a Facebook post. I'm the same way, like with anything that's big like that, I'm not good at like the one-on-one, like very personal, like emotional sort of interactions. I just like, it's hard. And I had some like pushback, especially because, you know, being in school and being around these people that I've literally known since like 5 years old. And even like teachers, and I grew up in Orange County, California, which is like notably a red dot in a very blue state. So like a lot of my teachers that I'd had for a while or like, you know, even students and they, you know, people can be very, very rude in high school anyways. So it's sort of that like very much like, oh, I will not call you that, or, you know, stuff, wow. You know, stuff like that. And I had to sort of just say, this is what high schoolers do, and that they, you know, they found other things to make fun of me or bully me for before in my life. So this is just another thing that they're going to grab onto and use against me. But yeah, you know that it's going to be hard and you really don't know how people are going to react. So it's a lot easier to just sort of say like, here's a text. Sorry that I don't feel comfortable like talking to you in person, but this is the way that I have to do it. And
yeah,
if that's the way that you have to do it, then like people have to respect that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you don't know if someone's face is going to do something in a moment that without them intending it is going to make you feel really bad. This is right. And when you feel the obligation to share something so personal in person with someone, I experienced, this is not comparing these things at all, but when I had two miscarriages last year, I found it extremely hard to tell people in person because it felt like in some ways I was burdening them with a knowledge that they didn't ask me for. And, you know, it's not like a core part of my identity that ultimately everyone's just going to have to deal with. It's a different kind of personal detail, but certainly one that I felt like if this person reacts in a way that just hurts me more without right. their intending it, then honestly, I will regret having told them and I'd rather let them have their reaction in private so that I don't also have to carry that. It makes a lot of sense to me. And on that note, I'm curious also. So Isaac, you've been featured twice, I think, in OutSports, unless there have been other times as well. There were two articles that I read, one from several years ago and one from last year. And it seems like you are, you know, you're well known in your community as an advocate for transgender rights and sport. So Was this sort of more public facing part of you? Was this a role that you intentionally and knowingly stepped into and chose, or did it just kind of happen to you?
Yeah, because I sort of already was like into like posting on social media and stuff like that. You know, just being a 20-something year old that is like on the internet.
Extremely online, I think, is what they say.
But it kind of turned into like, oh, this is a place that I feel like I can like make change. And it became like a really important thing for me, both with being trans and being disabled, and especially as a person where like you could look at me in my regular life, you could look at me running and you don't see me as a disabled person because I still like run like everyone else and everything like that. But like sort of having a space to talk about those two things and sort of normalize it within the running community and also in the entertainment world, it sort of just like, I guess it did kind of just happen. And then sort of when trans rights, and especially now, like as a diabetic, insulin pricing is a huge topic.
Yeah. And,
that one, I actually, like, I feel like it's really important for me to talk about being a diabetic who's a runner, because
yes.
I've seen several politicians do like these Q&As or something, and the topic will come up and they say, oh, well, we just need to get our communities to be healthier. We need to encourage exercising and healthier eating. And I'm like, no, that isn't the issue. The issue is people are dying because insulin prices are too high. And it doesn't matter how much I run, I'm not going to get rid of my diabetes, because that isn't the issue. So like being able to sort of bring those issues like sort of all together and like be generally like someone that can, you know, like just anyone running as much as I run can be like inspirational to people, but sort of being able to also tie in like other issues has become really important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Because a problem that I think a lot of running, recreational running has, is wanting to be very inclusive and wanting to demonstrate its inclusivity while also not really taking the steps to make it an inclusive place a lot of the time. I have an interview, I did this interview last week, but it's going to be coming out, I think, after this episode. I interviewed a woman with a disability, with MS, who asked for an accommodation from a marathon that she wanted to participate in, and they said no. And at the same time, they put her on a poster and made her kind of like a symbol of how inclusive and accessible and conscious of disability rights they were, while not actually providing her the accommodations that she would have needed to run that race. And I'm sure it sounds very familiar to you. Yeah, because I know that the needs of someone with diabetes who relies on insulin can also, depending on the race, depending on the security, can really tamp down the number of races you can participate in safely. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's something that people talk about nearly enough, because the people who get to make decisions about safety rules and regulations, who kind of dismiss accessibility concerns of a small group of people, saying, well, you know, this is a safety issue. And it's like, is it really a safety issue? Or is it just making you uncomfortable?
Yeah.
And I think that there definitely needs to be a lot more interrogation of that. And I'm so grateful for people like you who are willing to kind of live their lives on this public stage, but it also must be difficult sometimes to be a public persona and still kind of maintain your truth to yourself and your mm-hmm. duty to yourself first.
Yeah.
Cade, you've been very open on social media about your own transition as you go through it, about you've posted about legally changing your name and starting hormone replacement therapy and scheduling top surgery. And so how did you think through the decision to share all of these things with your social circle, and how has that felt, and what has helped the most about this openness that you've cultivated?
It's been great. In fact, you know, my cis friends are like, I am learning so much from you. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't even know, you know, and you're changing views, or not well, I guess, yeah, changing views. Like I have some people, some friends that are extremely religious and, you know, to be transgender, it's like, oh, really? What the heck? You know, and they've changed their outlook. They're like, oh my gosh, because they knew me before. It's almost like not that I was normal before, because what's normal? But to see what's happening, it changes their perception of what maybe I am so not religious. So please don't anybody be mad at me for saying the wrong thing here. But whatever's in the Bible, you know, I don't know what's in the Bible, but you know, it really makes them think and say, oh, wow, you know, and, you know, if they're such good Christians and God loved everybody, then why do they hate us so much? Us meaning transgender or gay or whatever, you know? And so it's been great. Like so many of my, you know, like I say, my straight friends or whatever, cis, they're like, this is great. I love, thank you so much for, you know, telling us what's happening in each step of this and what you're going to have to go through and all that. And so, and that is part of why I'm doing it, to educate, to help educate those out there that don't understand, you know, and why would you want to do this? You're 50, 52. Why not just live the rest of your life the way you were? Who cares? You know? And, you know, for the longest time, that's what I thought, you know, I'm too old, like I said, but no, I'm not. I mean, I'm so happy I made that decision to be me. You know, I wish I could have done it at an earlier age, you know, I wish I would have come out in high school or, you know, whatever. Like, I'm so envious of the younger generations that are able to do it now. Like, I have a nephew who came out as gay and he knew it was fine because of growing up with me, that it wasn't, you know, everybody accepted it in our family, that it wasn't a big deal. He just tells us, we're like, oh, that's awesome. You know, it wasn't a big deal. We didn't, you know, whatever. But I think helping educate people by telling them the steps you're going through and whatnot is a huge thing to society, because then people are like, wow, I knew this, you know, this person's still normal, you know, in the eyes of what they think normal is, you know, that makes sense.
You're still you. Yeah. You're still the you that they have always known.
Yeah.
You're just actually more you now.
More me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, so the biggest thing, you know, people, I'm not one of those people that gets completely upset, you know, maybe 2 years from now I will, but, you know, if they say my wrong name or the wrong pronoun, and I tell people, I go, it's okay. And like, so my 5280 brewery quest,
that
kind of runs into
good
that.
Good segue. So
I am on a quest to hit all of the breweries in Colorado.
Wow.
That's amazing.
My dog, Wrigley, is going to be the first dog to hit all the dog-friendly breweries in Colorado. So she's already been to over like 150 different breweries. I've been to over 200-something. So my breweries that I visit here, as soon as I posted about my transition, the first time I walked into one of the breweries, like the whole staff behind the counter came out and hugged me and were like, oh my God, we are so happy for you, so proud of you. Please don't be mad if we call you the wrong thing. And that's been the reception for everything. For all the, I go to a lot of breweries. I drink a lot of beer. I'm very responsible though. I Uber.
I love this. Love everything about it.
But you know, and they said I was even the topic in their, you know, team meeting and all this. And it's just been, you know, phenomenal.
Well, so you're hitting all the breweries in Colorado. How many have you been to and how many are left at this point?
Oh, God. Well, there's like over 400 and new ones open all the time. So it's a very long and expensive hobby.
Yeah. So but such a great one.
Oh, yeah. It's so fun. So like Wrigley, my dog, Will, who's a golden retriever, 12 years old, 12 years young. She's still
She's adorable. Yeah. She's so adorable.
She, you know, we'll go to like Colorado Springs for a 3-day weekend and hit a bunch of breweries. And I still haven't been to all the ones in the Springs, and I've been there twice. Same with Fort Collins. Last summer, we went to, not Steamboat. Oh my gosh. Silverthorne area, you know, all these different places. So it's not a cheap hobby. And even in Denver alone, a ton open up here and there.
Yeah.
So it's just like, but I do have a couple friends that have been to all of them and they just go to the new ones as they open. But
Oh, so they're just in maintenance status now. Well, good. I know what to do with you when you come and visit Boston, because there there is no lack of little breweries with great beer around here for sure. That's a great pastime, and I love that the folks at your local place were excited to embrace you. And
it was awesome.
Yeah, that makes me really happy. I don't believe that either of you has a duty to anybody to educate them. That's not on any individual person. And I know that, that's sort of how you sometimes get thrust into a public figure role without necessarily wanting it for yourself. Is I think there is really a sense that like, well, you know, it's my job to educate people and to show everyone how this works and breed awareness. And that is what needs to happen. But I just always hope that people have loving people around them to remind them that their first duty is to themselves and that they have to take care of themselves first, while at the same time acknowledging and embracing what an amazing thing it is that you both have done for all of the people who follow you and know who you are. I mean, you talked about not having anyone to look up to, Kate, not seeing anyone who was transitioning and not really even knowing that that was a possibility for you. And the fact that in many ways, I mean, there's so much work to be done on this front, in this sport specifically. But also, I look at my daughter, she's 4 years old, and she has a child in her class at her preschool who was a boy when they started going to school together, and in the last year has started using a different name and wearing dresses and saying, I'm a girl now. And we were making Valentine's this past weekend for the whole class. And the teacher sent out a list of all the names. And I was just absentmindedly reading through the names. And I read this child's birth name. And my daughter immediately corrected me and said, no, her name is this. And she's a girl, mom. Oh, and I was like, okay, awesome. No, you're right. Yep. You are absolutely right. My daughter is, I would say, high femme. She, girls in dresses is like her favorite thing. And she is about as girly as little girls get in all of her tastes. And that is how she doesn't really ever want to wear pants. She only wears them under her dresses because I make her, because it's cold outside. But, when it comes to other children and their choices, there is absolutely no contradiction to her that she gets to pick what she wants to wear. And also everyone else gets to pick what they want to wear. We read tons of books about how boys can wear dresses and girls can wear dresses. And sometimes girls realize that they're boys and sometimes boys realize that they're girls. And this is just kind of the water that she drinks now. Whereas I did not meet an openly gay person my own age until I was in high school. And I am not, MK always teases me about how young I am. I'm 33, and already in my life, I think we have come to a point where there are so many children, not all children and not all communities, but there are so many children growing up in a world where, oh yeah, that's her name and she's a girl, mom, you know, teachers, mm-hmm. only teachers open the door and she is a girl and don't forget it.
yeah. And it's been such a like quick thing too, it seems like, because I was the first person at my high school to come out as trans.
And really?
Yeah. So, and I know that, like, you know, other places that it was probably like a quicker thing, that like there were more younger people coming out other places. But I ended up being like the person to go to when staff didn't know anything, right?
Really?
So, yeah. And that's sort of what like started my whole like being an advocate, I guess, for my community, was that I had to, because I was at school and I just had to talk about it and be that person so that I could get through the school day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can see that. Not a whole lot of choice. And especially when staff members are coming to you as a source of information.
Yeah. I was like,
and that's how they see you.
Too. I don't know anything. Like, you
know? But you knew a lot more than them.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot of responsibility for a child, really. I mean, you were still a kid in so many ways. And so how did that play out on sports teams? That was when you were playing lacrosse, right?
Yeah, I actually ended up, we have a little section of time after the season ends where we're just like kind of preparing for the next year and whatever. And we're having like casual practices. And I took my team at the end of one of those practices and said, you know, I told them and was like, I still want to play with you. I just need to like make sure that everyone is respectful and everything. And they were great. You know, if anyone had any hangups about it, they didn't show it. And I was lucky to be able to stick with this team that I had been playing with for 3 years already. But it was hard because my choices essentially were to stop playing. I could move to the boys team, but it's a completely different sport, girls and boys lacrosse.
Absolutely.
So I could have done that, but then I probably wouldn't have played. And like, I didn't know anyone and all that stuff, or I could stick with the girls team, which, you know, it's like their drawbacks and whatever. But one of the good things was that one of our regular referees was also a trans guy. And so I became pretty close with him, you know, that year, especially. But yeah, it's hard because it's either you get to feel like you're a part of the team that you're supposed to be on, or you get to stick with the people that you know and the sport that you know really well. And that's why I kind of like gravitated more towards running at that point, is because, you know,
yeah,
I didn't have
that's to do that. A big dilemma. There, your choices are not good in that situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I wanted to play lacrosse, but you know why I didn't? I didn't want to wear that skirt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I was a goalie, so I didn't have to wear the skirt.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Well, then you got to deal with lacrosse balls flying in your face, which mere idea of being a goalie in anything terrified me.
Yeah, I wanted to be a goalie anyways.
That's good. Like,
I did get hit in the head several times, and that's... That's one of the other disabilities that I have. I have chronic migraines. I cannot do. Yeah. And that's one of the hardest parts of training for me is like getting up, being like, okay, I woke up and my body otherwise feels like ready to run, but I have a headache and I can't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just have to kind of ride that out.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Did you have concussions? Is this a recurring concussion aftermath thing?
I think so. We never actually tested for that.
Ugh.
But yeah, I got hit in the head the first time when I was 10. So
oh my gosh.
It's been, yeah. And I think I had like 6 major times that I got hit.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, the aftermath of that is really hard to deal with. I have had some friends go through it and it is no joke recovering from it. And then also living with the parts that don't go away.
I'm
very sorry to hear that. So when you have a migraine, you just kind of take the day and push your run to the next day?
Yeah, that's pretty much all I can do. Like, I'm taking medication for it. It brings it down from like every day to like 2 or 3 days a week. Sometimes if I wake up with one, it'll be gone by the end of the day. Sometimes I lose the day. Sometimes I don't. It just, you never know.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, gosh, between that and dealing with diabetes and all of the other things that we've talking about, I mean, these are all things that you deal with on a day-to-day basis. And it's all of the different things that make it that much harder for a person to be a runner, that much harder for a person to show up at any start line. I mean, these are the conversations that I think are so important because there are more people than we can possibly know who don't feel particularly at home in the recreational running community for any one of these reasons, whether it's disability or gender selection on race entry forms, that honestly, if that is the thing that makes you not want to sign up for a race, I get that. Having to, like I said earlier, confront your identity every single time you sign up for something, that is a thing that would not be that hard to fix. And yet, much of what people talk about when they talk about transgender participation has much more to do with the highest levels of sport, where those things do matter and they do have an impact on, you know, the outcome and who wins and who, you know, has a career in this and who doesn't. And honestly, you know, people just quote whatever they hear to justify their discomfort. And none of that logic applies to people who are participating in the sport with zero expectations of winning. And it's also, I think, really important at the same time to note that we don't have many male transgender athletes in the public eye at all at the top level of the sport, running and other sports too. So the few who exist, I think, really do need more attention, in part so that we can be having different conversations about what we need to be doing for transgender athletes to make this sport inclusive for them. Because it's not just about the prize money in the female category.
People will always, point to the trans woman who won one race. And it's like, oh, but did you know that the first trans person to compete in the Olympic trials is a man? Like, why don't you realize that? Like,
I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago, I believe. Chris Mosher was the first trans person.
Yes. That's right.
It's like, oh, so you keep pulling up these random, like, instances of trans women who, you know, are quote unquote dominating in their sport, which they really aren't. They're winning as much as anyone else might.
Exactly.
They work really hard. And then you completely ignore the men because that doesn't fit into your narrative.
Right. And because when you transition from female to male, you are putting yourself at a huge disadvantage if what you want to do is win. Mm-hmm. I really do hope that that conversation changes. And I'm wondering from both of you, what are your hopes for the future of transgender runners and athletes, both recreationally and professionally? Because Kate, I hope that all three of us have very long lives ahead of us.
Right.
And when we are actually old, because I reject the notion that you're old, when we are actually old and we look back, what will be the things that kind of tell us whether we've successfully made running a more inclusive sport than it is right now, rather than just said running is so inclusive and left it at that?
Am I supposed to answer that?
Either of you can answer it. It's totally fine. If you have something, if you don't, that's okay too. I know it's a hard question.
I mean, I hope it does happen. I know it will eventually. Hopefully in my lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, I can't believe that I didn't know Chris Mosher was the first trans athlete to participate in the Olympic trials. That's actually, I was not aware of that. I knew about him. I knew his name, but the fact that that story is not everywhere is bananas.
Yeah. And that's why, like, that's one of those things that, like, I have been sharing everywhere. Like, you know, even if it's just,
I gotta follow you on Twitter. Maybe I do. I should check and see. Let's make sure that I follow you on Twitter.
You know, like, even if it's just my friends or whatever, and like they spread it too. It's like, those are the things that, you know, we need to be talking about. And it's like almost contradictory to like the constant narrative of stuff. And like, even like people that, I'm in an LGBT running club. So a lot of the people in my club that I'm friends with are like very open and like, know a lot about, you know, LGBT issues and stuff in general. And they'll share stuff about trans people or trans athletes in general. And I'll see like friends of theirs say, oh, and you all think this is okay. And like, you know, all of this like horrible stuff. And they'll tell them, hey, you know, this is what's actually happening. And this is why trans people are real and they deserve rights and whatever. But, you know, you still see like their friends with them, you know,
yeah.
And it's stuff that I end up being exposed to because I am, you know, a friend of a friend. So, you know, the more that people are exposed to like positive things, like the better.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that has a lot to do with, like you said earlier, who we look up to and what we see. I mean, there are actually there are transgender actors on TV shows somewhat regularly now, which again was not the case at all when I was in high school. I don't know if either of you watched Euphoria. Watched that whole show all by myself, and it was not a perfect show, but I loved Hunter Schafer. I thought she was incredible and got a lot of recognition for the role that she played, and I really hope that she keeps getting really good roles like that, and that shows keep wanting to explore stories of characters like her, and you know, also actually having trans actors play trans characters, as opposed to, oh, I remember the one trans character in the TV show when I was growing up on Friends, Chandler's dad, played by, Kathleen Turner. My God, that show has really not aged well in so many ways. That is one of the most embarrassing things to look back on, though, and just say, wow, I don't think that episode of that show, that storyline in that show would get made today. And that seems like a really good thing. And sometimes we need just one good thing to look at and say, okay. And the last thing I want to talk about and ask you about, the bottom line for us at Fitness Protection on this podcast, is that we're never really talking about the running, right? No one picks up a new hobby over the age of 25, or in Isaac's case, at the age of 12. much less. So, you know, I think you still fit into this theory, but you just, you know, you got started on your journey towards it at a younger age. Much less a hobby like distance running because they are bored. I doubt, even though you were so young, I doubt you started running marathons because you were bored.
Oh no.
You know, all the things, divorce, death, miscarriage, infertility, disease, tragedy, PTSD, recovery. People choose running because they are running through very tough periods in their lives. And many of these periods, I think you could characterize many of them as transitions. And we aren't here to weigh and judge things. We really, this space, this company, and this podcast is always about supporting and celebrating and making space for the experiences that we are all running through in some ways. And we really, the bottom line is we want everyone to be able to do that together. And so Isaac, you might have started young when it comes to marathoning, but you are clearly extremely wise. And I would love to hear, so we have another podcast called The Morning Mantra Podcast, and it's a almost daily 5-minute podcast. And what we try to do is come up with a thought, a motivational spark of a little bit of extra self-confidence that can be distilled down into a phrase that's very concrete and memorable. And it's kind of like an anchor that you can grab and hold on to as you move through a situation. And so I'm curious as to whether, and then for you too, Cade, whether there was any particular anchor that you remember holding on to during your transition that kept you grounded and helped you move through it. Any kind of baseline that you knew you could come back to and remind yourself, reassure yourself that you were you and that you were going to be okay.
I guess just support from family and friends for me. I mean, it's been tremendous. You know, when I posted my coming out on Facebook, there was probably 500 comments, and I got some private messages from people who also were going through the transition, but hadn't come to terms with, you know, being able to put it on Facebook. And they were like, you know, thank you. And so stuff like that just helps reassure. I mean, not that I didn't do the right thing, because I did, but it just helped solidify that in your own mind.
Yeah, of course. And that's exactly, I didn't ask it very well, but that's what I meant to ask. People who are running through something that they can't be open about yet, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I think I have kind of a similar thing, is that, it didn't start happening until a couple years in, but people telling me that I was part of the reason that they came out. And especially there was someone that I really looked up to in high school, who I was always so themselves and like don't care about what other people think at all. And I would really aspire to be like that. And then after we left high school, told me that they came out as trans partly because of me. And like sort of that like switch, it you know, felt really good. And, you know, having several people in high school and outside of high school, people that I've met more recently telling me that I have inspired them to come out, it's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an awesome feeling.
That's amazing. What did you say to the people, Cade, who reached out to you and said that they were transitioning, but they hadn't come to terms with the ability to be open about it yet?
First, I congratulated them, you know, saying that you're doing the right thing. You need to be you, you know, just encouraging them. And, you know, I'm extremely lucky in my friend and family support, and not everybody has that, unfortunately. In fact, my one friend that came out to me, he's transitioning to a female, and he's having horrible, horrible, horrible issues with his ex-wife and her letting him see his children. So he hasn't come out partially because of that. I mean, she knows, and that's why she's keeping his kids from him. And it's just, it's gut-wrenching, you know? And then I have another friend that I actually met on a transgender support group who lives in Illinois, and we've become friends. And he made a whole separate Facebook page with his new name and everything because he still can't come out to part of his family. I mean, it hurts because I'm extremely blessed and lucky with the support I've gotten, but I have to remember not everybody has that, you know? So you just help encourage them as much as you can and tell them, hey, I'm here. And I told my friend that's transitioning to female, I said, you know, if you need to text me in the middle of the night, text me in the middle of the night. I'm here for you. You know, so I've known them since we went to high school and stuff together. So I've known them for years.
I think everyone needs a person, at least one person that they feel they can be wholly themselves with and fully there in whatever they're going through and open about how they're feeling. And I wish for everyone who is currently running through something that they have that. And I want to thank both of you so much for your openness and your generosity with your stories. I'm really, really excited for our audience to get to know you and follow you. I will link to all of your social media things so that they can follow you as you go through your next races and everything that you're taking on in your life. And Isaac, we didn't even get to talk about your work, but what show or shows are you working on right now?
Right now, I'm working on Moulin Rouge and Beetlejuice on Broadway.
Oh, that's fantastic. Oh my gosh. And you work in wardrobe?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, definitely got to follow you on Instagram. We'll make sure everyone else does too. And I think I am so bad at the end of the podcast. I'm really bad at ending podcasts. Let's just say thank you so much to both of you. Take care and best of luck with everything. And thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.